Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
In the summer of 1980, a film was released based on a novel by Clive Cussler. The big-budget film starred Jason Robards, Richard Jordan, and the legendary Alec Guinness. The film's plot is about the search for a radioactive element that could be used during the Cold War. The unique element could also be used as a power source, and when it was discovered in February 1912, it was transported to America on board the Titanic. With the knowledge of how valuable this element is, plans are made to retrieve it from the ocean floor by raising the Titanic. The film called Raise the Titanic came out nearly 70 years after the sinking of the fabled ocean liner. And in the movie, we see Titanic raised to the ocean's surface. This movie presented a fictional story featuring the ship's unknown location. But little did we know, just 5 years after this film came out, the final resting place of the legendary ship would soon be discovered. I'm Jamie Logie, and this is Everything 80s, a podcast that looks back on a decade that forever changed the way we dress, consume, and connect it. And today, we travel back to 1985, to an event many people didn't think would ever happen. Not only was it a race to discover the location of the iconic ship, but it's a story about technological advancements and even Cold War secrecy. This is the discovery of Titanic. Are you ready to go back to Titanic? We all know the story of the largest ship of its time that was deemed unsinkable. The Titanic left Southampton in the UK on April 10, 1912, before striking an iceberg and sinking on April 15th. 1,500 of the more than 2,200 people on board perished. And people have been fascinated by the story and the ship ever since. But the question remained for years and decades. Where did the Titanic end up? Where was the final resting point on the ocean floor? The Titanic struck the iceberg some 375 nautical miles south of Newfoundland, Canada. In such a vast area, the final resting spot could have been anywhere. Talks of finding the wreck of the Titanic began almost as soon as it sank. But limits in technology made any type of pursuit a complete pipe dream. Over the decades, the mythology of Titanic only continued to grow. And the question remained, where exactly is it? Would the most famous ship of all time ever be found? That takes us into the 1980s. But first, we need to meet Dr. Robert Ballard. Ballard, an oceanographer from Wichita, Kansas, eventually ended up in San Diego, California. Ballard dreamt of becoming Captain Nemo and ended up in the U.S. Navy working on a deep-diving submarine. Ballard explains in a lecture at the University of Rhode Island that he had had a passion for exploring the bottom of the ocean. something he did for 2.5 decades. The average floor depth in the ocean is around 12,000 feet, and Ballard was frustrated by the 5 or so hours of time spent traveling to and from the bottom of the ocean floor in a submersible. It was a slow and arduous process, not to mention dangerous. Through the 60s and into the 70s, Ballard was imagining what a new way of exploring could look like. Instead of sending a person down to the ocean floor, what if there was another way? In 1981, he drew a concept of this vision. Ballard's vision resulted in his version of a remotely operated vehicle, or ROV. A submersible ROV is tethered to a ship and acts as the eyes and ears of the crew deep down in the ocean. Ballard explains that his first application of this technology was to be the search for the most famous ship of the 20th century, the Titanic. His ROV would be the most effective and safest way to search the ocean floor for the legendary ocean liner. But Ballard couldn't get anyone to fund it. But this is when the Navy stepped in. In 1982, the Navy sponsored the development of the technology, but in doing so, needed Ballard's assistance in using it for a classified mission. Ballard's sights were set on Titanic, but the Navy wanted him to explore 2 Cold War nuclear submarines that were lost in the 60s. One was called the Thresher, the other, the Scorpion. The Scorpion, specifically, sank with nuclear weapons on board. Ballard's job was to track down, map, and photograph where the submarines were to locate the nuclear weapons. This was the deal for the Navy funding his technology, as they needed an experienced explorer like Ballard to search for the submarine wreckage. But this was an extremely top-secret mission. The U.S. didn't want the Soviets to be aware of the search for the nuclear submarines. And also, they needed to see if the Soviets had been down there already trying to retrieve the weapons. The cover-up of the mission was that they were searching for the Titanic. This was all classified at the time, but was eventually declassified a few decades later. However, it was this Cold War mission that actually helped lead to the discovery of Titanic, which had always been Ballard's ultimate personal goal. According to History.com, Ballard photographed the Thresher in 1984 and then the Scorpion in 1985. Still under the ruse that they were simply testing the underwater technology with a plan to search for Titanic. Finding the submarines was still tough, though. But Ballard had figured something out. Something that would be instrumental in the Titanic search. When the 2 submarines sank, they basically imploded underwater. The heaviest objects on the submarine sank straight down, but lighter material was strewn out all over. The current took this lighter material, leading to a long debris trail, kind of like a runway leading to the bigger objects. Keep this in mind for a little later on. But while Ballard had been searching for the nuclear subs, other groups had already been searching for Titanic during the 80s, with expeditions in 1980, 81, and 1983. Knowing exactly where to search was, of course, the big issue. The thought at the time was Titanic didn't sink at the location where it sent out the SOS. So, how do you narrow it down in such a gigantic search area? Ballard explains that there were 2 critical pieces of information to help them find where the Titanic may actually be. The first was the Carpathia. This was the ship that arrived a few hours after the Titanic sank. Navigating through the ice fields in the North Atlantic, this is the ship that rescued over 700 people confined to the lifeboats. The Carpathia was on the opposite route of the Titanic. On that fateful night, the Carpathia was on its way from New York to England when it got the distress call. The Carpathia turned and headed toward the reported position of Titanic, but discovered the lifeboats in another area. So that's the first thing Ballard considered, the location of the lifeboats. The second is California. The California was the ship that didn't respond to Titanic's distress call. This is the ship that supposedly saw the Titanic and may have even been close enough to see the distress flares. But that's as close as it ever got. The logbook from the California on that night had measured the drift of the current. This is another specific data point to assist Ballard in his search. And this is all the information that helped lead to a specific search area. But that search area everyone had was about 100 square miles. That's about the size of the city of Sacramento, California. The other issue is that running through the search area is what they call a submarine canyon, which is a steep-sided valley cut into the seafloor. Not only was this search area huge, but they basically had a Grand Canyon on the bottom of it. This further complicated the search process. The traditional way to search the ocean was through side-scan sonar. Ballard explains this as like mowing a lawn up and down, with the sonar looking out directly to the right and left of the straight line you are mowing. This is not only a long and arduous process, but also isn't the most ideal search technique for an underwater canyon. The Titanic could be hiding in some deep shadow or crevice within the canyon that could easily be missed. The other search expeditions, however, had much more time to conduct their searches, something Ballard wouldn't have the luxury of. Ballard explains how a French expedition conducted a search in July of 1985. If they found Titanic, the French would get credit, but at least he would have been present for the discovery. The French, however, never realized how close they actually got, so stick around to find out exactly what happened with that. The attempts by the French resulted in the widening of the search area up to 150 square miles. Now we're talking about the size of Denver, Colorado. That's a search area half the size of Calgary, Alberta. If you live in the UK, that's larger than the city of Bristol. But after investigating and photographing the Scorpion on his secret mission, Ballard has his chance to search for the Titanic and quickly snaps into action. He now also has a new and better way to search compared to the other groups. Thanks to the Navy's funding, Ballard now has the American-made Argo, the deep-towed underwater video camera sled he designed. The Argo, about the size of a car, could operate 20,000 feet below the surface. According to the Washington Post, the Argo could show a 3-mile-wide swath of the ocean floor. The Argo wasn't just sonar, but a series of video cameras. Argo could record wide-angle film and zoom in on objects for more detail. Ballard now had eyes and ears deep underwater that could operate 24 hours a day. Another key piece of the puzzle was the Knorr. The Knorr is an American ship operated by the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution, and it carried the crew and towed the Argo. The Knorr is unique as it has giant blades in the bow and stern, which allow it to stay pretty stationary in heavy seas. The Knorr could also hover over a site and turn on its axis. In a 2018 interview with CNN, Ballard shares that after he and his team had finished investigating the Thresher and the Scorpion, time left to search for Titanic was quickly running out. Conditions in the North Sea were deteriorating, and their window was closing. Ballard and the crew were left with less than 2 weeks to tack on an actual search for the mythical ship.
Everything 80s will return after these messages.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy. Woo! And sadness. Oh. And anger. Definitely some disgust.
Rose!
And I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
With just 12 days left to search because of the worsening sea conditions, Ballard's thought process to find Titanic needed to change. Up to that point, there had always been the idea that the Titanic sank intact. But eyewitness accounts from the night of the sinking said the ship broke in two. The search was now a joint French-US endeavor, and Ballard took the gamble on the ship breaking in two. This completely changed the approach for his search. Instead of looking for the ship, Ballard employed the same technique when searching for those submarines. Search for its trail. If the Titanic split in two, it would have shed off a ton of debris the same way the submarines did when they imploded underwater. By looking for the debris field, a path to the final resting place could reveal itself, like a long runway to the ultimate goal. Ballard figured that Titanic's debris field should be about a mile long, running north to south. A mile of debris would hopefully be easier to find than a 900-foot-long ship that was only 90 feet wide. But again, where do you start in such a large search area? Since this is now the mid-80s, computer technology has advanced by leaps and bounds. But the computers can still be wrong. A computer calculation doesn't take into account so many real-world variables. Ballard then asks himself the question, what is the lightest material that could have come out of the Titanic as it sank? You may be thinking of things like paper, cutlery, or items of clothing. But don't forget, there were other objects from Titanic that, despite being very heavy, never sank. The lifeboats. Ballard went to the area where the Carpathia picked up the lifeboats. If he went a few miles south of where the Carpathia said that spot was, the Titanic would have to be somewhere north. By using Argo, Ballard still sent it up and down underwater, but with lines 0.9 miles apart. This was much wider than what the previous missions were doing with their simple up-and-down lawn-mowing style that used sonar. Argo, of course, had a big advantage. Instead of just using its sonar, it had the video cameras. Ballard wasn't looking for the ship, but for clues revealing its location. It was a trail of breadcrumbs, if you will. On the morning of September 1st, 1985, on the ninth pass, 2.5 miles below them, they saw something. Debris. Then, more debris. Was this the debris field they were looking for? As Argo, deep in the ocean, began to head its way north, 2.5 miles above, everyone held their breath. It's a pretty good bet that this wasn't just random debris they had found, but hopes were still held at bay. This was a similar route that a lot of warships sailed during the Second World War. The Germans sank a lot of ships along this convoy route, but Ballard and the researchers believed they were in the right spot. The main thing is they were looking for debris and found some, so they began to follow that trail north. The debris trail seemed promising until they saw something unmistakable, a boiler. A boiler that looked just like the one from Titanic. Considering where they were and the fact they had a picture of that boiler on their wall, it couldn't be mistaken for anything else. They were so close. And then, the next day at around 2 a.m., a wall of steel emerged out of the dark. At long last, there it was. At 12,600 feet below the surface of the ocean, the RMS Titanic. The first glimpse of the iconic ship didn't come from the front, but on the starboard or right-hand side of Titanic. Ballard and the team had done it. The discovery of Titanic quickly made headlines around the world. Within 2 days, images of the sunken ship spread around the globe. But this news presented a problem. Searching for the Titanic was the cover-up for what Ballard had really been looking for, the nuclear weapons. In his lecture at the University of Rhode Island, Ballard shares that the Pentagon was furious with him. They said he wasn't actually supposed to find Titanic, just continue to talk about finding it. This was the way to throw the Soviets off the scent. But it was too late. The entire world knew of the discovery of the legendary ship. There were a few more problems. The Discovery crew tried to keep the location secret to A, keep away treasure hunters, and B, continue to not let the Soviets know what they were actually up to and the technology they were using. The ruse needed to continue. A September 8, 1985 New York Times article discusses how the underwater device used to find the Titanic was merely being tested. It does make mention of how the Argo may be used in secret Navy projects and may one day be able to locate lost submarines. The article also shares what turned out to be some denials by officials. Quote, in planning for the sea trials of the Argo, oceanographers at Woods Hole asked the military if it would be all right to search for the Titanic. They said, do you have any objections if we test in the area of the Titanic, recalled Captain Brent Baker, a Navy spokesperson at the Pentagon. We didn't care. The point was to see if the new system worked. Unquote. Not only had the Titanic been discovered, but the imagery was astonishing. Imagery that revealed more than expected. On September 2nd, 1985, Dan Rather reported on the CBS Evening News that images of where the iceberg fatally struck the ship had been revealed. Human eyes hadn't seen the Titanic in 73 years. Now, millions of people were able to see it for themselves through moving pictures beamed into their own living rooms, a technology that couldn't even be imagined back in 1912 when Titanic first set sail. Pictures taken at the bottom of the ocean were shared to the world, and we got to see the damage the bow had taken after striking the iceberg on that fateful night. Argo also captured images from the side of the ship and then floated above, getting a top-down shot of the bow of Titanic. The original mast was still intact, and we could actually see it, along with the crow's nest where the iceberg was first spotted. Next, the cameras pointed towards the bridge and the captain's window, the spot where Titanic Captain Edward John Smith sailed the fateful voyage. But the search mission wasn't all smooth sailing, as it were. CBS News reported that the crew nearly lost one of the subs after it hit the rigging around one of Titanic's giant smokestacks. The sub was trying to find the aft or rear part of the ship. This part of the mission had failed, but revealed something interesting. It appeared as if the rear part of the ship had been disconnected. The relay of the information from Ballard to the world also had a Canadian connection. A September 2, 1985 Washington Post article shares that the announcement of the discovery came from Ballard in a ship-to-shore interview with the Canadian CTV television network. And then one of the next significant discoveries was the reveal that the back half of the ship was some 400 meters away from the front. Titanic had indeed broken in half. A big issue with exploring the North Atlantic in September is you run the risk of intense weather and storms. The crew only had about 4 days to explore the wreckage before they had to head home to safety. In the following days, though, Ballard appeared in an extensive press conference aired on CBS where he walked the world through the process of the Titanic's discovery. He shared more of the astonishing images alongside diagrams of the ship to show exactly what part of Titanic the images were from. However, Ballard and the other scientists were far from done and returned a year later in 1986 with more time and more equipment. This time, they had a three-person submersible called Alvin, and Robert Ballard was able to see the Titanic with his own eyes. 1986 was when they created a full mosaic of the ship, giving us more detail than ever. They also found a few other interesting objects. A July 19, 1986 New York Times article reports that the expedition uncovered some safes still aboard Titanic. Using Alvin, they even tried to pull one of the safe's doors open with a remote control claw. Between the original mission in 1985 and the follow-up mission in 1986, much of the information and imagery was put together in a book from 1988 that you may remember called Exploring the Titanic. And on that second expedition, they also had a remote vehicle called Jason Jr., which could travel deeper into the ship to reveal more astonishing imagery and video footage. The public, however, never saw a lot of that footage. But just a year before this recording, 80 minutes of never-before-seen video was finally released by the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution. For 73 years, no human being had seen Titanic. But in 1985, they would. It would then be another 38 years before we got to see the majority of this remarkable uncut video footage from that day in 1986. I mentioned earlier about the French and how the discovery of the Titanic almost became a completely different story. In his lecture at the University of Rhode Island, Robert Ballard explains that the French, on their own expedition, used the side sonar search technique, mowing the lawn up and down, as it were. In 1985, on their very first line of underwater sonar search, the French took a southern line. While on this first pass, the wind pushed their ship slightly to the south. Had their ship stayed in position, they would have found the Titanic on their very first try. The wind that pushed them caused them to miss the discovery by less than 300 meters. Ballard would have just been an observer. The ultimate discovery of Titanic was a joint U.S.-French expedition, but Dr. Robert Ballard was the expedition leader, something that wouldn't have happened if the wind hadn't blown the French ship out of position. The work of Dr. Ballard is pretty astonishing. Over his career, he's been like the Indiana Jones of the seas, the Carl Sagan of our underwater universe. The discovery of the Titanic was a joint and team effort, but it was the ingenuity, insights, and instinct of Ballard that led to its discovery. And I was at the perfect age to appreciate the discovery of the Titanic. I was about 8 years old and already fascinated with the legendary ship. I had a picture book about the Titanic sinking, and to find out they had discovered it astonished me, as it did everyone. In my mind, everything about Titanic seemed like a fantasy, more of a story than a real event, and I vividly remember seeing the images of it on the news. Titanic had been in a watery grave for 3/4 of a century, but now, here it was. We knew where to find it, and we knew what happened to it. The final resting place of the RMS Titanic was no longer a mystery. If you ever wondered what the RMS in RMS Titanic stood for, it means Royal Mail Ship. One of the functions of the Titanic was to carry mail from the UK to the US, and an RMS designation means a privately owned vessel as a contract with Royal Mail to carry post across the seas. The Titanic sat undiscovered on the ocean floor through 2 world wars, the Great Depression, the creation of television, the growth of air travel, space travel, satellites, and humans walking on the moon. In 1912, most homes were lit with gas lamps. Even a decade after Titanic sank, half of all American homes didn't even have electricity. When the Titanic was discovered, the world was able to find out about it at the same time via images beamed by satellites into boxes in our homes. When Titanic sank, it was still 2 years until the first Charlie Chaplin movie was released. When Titanic was discovered, Back to the Future had just been released a few months prior. It was astonishing to think how much the world had changed since Titanic made that fateful voyage. It was called the Ship of Dreams, and for Robert Ballard, his dream of finding the Titanic had come true, and it gave all of us one of the most significant and memorable events of the entire 1980s. So that's our show. Thank you so much for listening. If you're new here, welcome. And if you're looking for more 1980s content, I have a ton of previous episodes just waiting for you to listen to them. If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to the Everything 80s podcast wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss out on new episodes. If you're a longtime listener, thank you so much for being here and for all the support. So I'm Jamie. This has been Everything 80s, but I'll be back soon with a new episode. Don't you dare miss it.